Hey, it's Steph Dixon, and welcome to the Live Wide Awake podcast. Now, by now, you've probably heard of the words blockchain, NFTs, Web3 buzzing around, and maybe you've even started to get a little bit curious about what it all means. I certainly have, and I've been seeing a lot of people who work in the environmental space starting to come out with projects. I'm personally pretty intrigued by the potential application and impact for society and the environment with this technology. So today I'm speaking with Matt Ricard, the co-founder of Task.io, a Stellar-based blockchain platform that helps social enterprises to scale more efficiently, and the Blue Marble, an eco-friendly NFT marketplace where creators can support social and environmental causes. Now, the common thread there is Stellar-based blockchain, which is alleged to be faster, cheaper, and more energy efficient than typical blockchain-based systems. We're going to dive into this in our chat more, but for now, it's time to live wide awake. Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining. Looking forward to diving into this conversation, because this will be one of the first times we actually talk about these topics on the podcast, which is why before we actually deep dive into our conversations, I want to make sure that everyone is on the same page and understanding what we're talking about. So would love for you to explain in your own words what Web3 is and the parts that make it up, including blockchain, crypto, and NFTs, and anything else you think is relevant before we go deeper into our conversation today.
Cool. Thanks, Steph. Good morning. Yeah, great to be invited onto your podcast. Appreciate it. So, yeah, Web3, I mean, it's a term, right? I think actually Web3 was being thrown around kind of 7-8 years ago initially, but, you know, the kind of dummy's guide to 1, 2, 3, you know, Web1 was what, kind of 90s, you know, first websites, kind of HTML pages. Hey, then we've starting to get into, you know, e-commerce, and then we had Web2, what, mid-2000s, which was really the kind of the social media. I mean, you could list out everything in Web2, but frankly, social media, I think, you know, 90% of the Web2 experience, and very much about big organizations taking control of the internet, owning data, making money from data. And now Web3, which, you know, I don't know, Web3 is being talked about a lot now, whether we're in Web3 now, whether it is Web3, it's one of these things that, hey, in 10 years, they'll look back and go, oh, that was the Web3 stage. And that'll be when we're talking about Web4. But, you know, Web3, I mean, you asked me this because actually I run a business. I'm co-founder of a business that's in the blockchain space, which we're going to talk about. That is one part of Web3. But, you know, Web3 is virtual reality, AI, blockchain, NFTs. Now, you know, why is that Web3 versus what Web2 was? For me, the big difference, I think, and the exciting thing is this kind of decentralized opportunity versus centralized. And what I mean by that is, yeah, if you look at a Facebook or you look at a Spotify, you know, these are big companies that make money through, you know, big customer bases and owning data and doing stuff with that data. The Web3 opportunity is, hey, I'm an individual, I'm a musician, I'm an artist, I'm many other things. And I now have the opportunity within the internet to own my opportunity as an individual. That I think is, that's the exciting thing about Web3, and that's, you know, what it is. NFTs, blockchain, decentralized applications, which link out into community rather than being owned by corporate.
Thank you. Thank you for that overview. And specifically blockchain, because I know that's also what we're going to be touching on later with the work that you're doing. Could you just sort of give us an explanation for that too before we dive in?
You know, we run a business. I mean, blockchain, really, if it's a way of validating transactions in a decentralized manner. I mean, it's so annoying to use all those buzzwords and explain it that way, but I like to think of it like a spreadsheet, right? Where, hey, within this spreadsheet, you know, I know that, yeah, if I have a spreadsheet, it's on a server, and that spreadsheet is data. And if I own that spreadsheet, I can change what's in that spreadsheet, right? When you use blockchain, you're validating those transactions in a decentralized manner where people all over the world on their own computers own the validation of that data. So that's, again, about, you know, that's where it becomes a kind of safe, robust mechanism in terms of validation. Now, this whole kind of, you know, blockchain, Bitcoin thing, because that's really, you know, where I suppose blockchain has become famous is through Bitcoin, although there's many different blockchain ledgers, many different uses. But, you know, essentially Bitcoin has a blockchain ledger, and the verification of Bitcoin transactions happen on blockchain. So, you know, that is the blockchain, that is the Bitcoin link. But, you know, blockchain ledgers, many different blockchain ledgers exist, and it has many different uses outside of the, you know, the Bitcoin world.
Mm. Great. Thank you. So first and foremost, I think we should address the sustainability elephant in the room. It's no secret that Bitcoin is very energy guzzling, with estimates saying that one Bitcoin transaction uses 2,100 kilowatt hours, the same energy that an average US household would use in 75 days. So can you unpack the scale and the impact of Bitcoin for us, and any other stats or understanding you may have as comparative?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely important. I mean, like I say, I'm running a business that's all about social and environmental progress. And, you know, we run on blockchain. So it sounds almost hypocritical if you don't understand what's underneath that. So, yeah. Also, I mean, a quick kind of caveat here. I'm not the, you know, my role is sales and marketing. So I'm not technical, but to give it the kind of high level explanation. So Bitcoin, the process of validating Bitcoin transactions and mining new Bitcoins actually uses what's called a proof of work process. And this is what's using all the energy. And it's basically, you know, computers validating, actually solving equations. So, you know, if I transfer my Bitcoin, if I sell Bitcoin, if I'm, you know, doing anything with Bitcoin, there's someone that has to validate that on the blockchain ledger. And that is using energy. Now, why does it use so much energy with Bitcoin, this whole proof of work process? It's because really, in the simplest terms, it's because it's competitive. And the more computers you have solving the equations that will give you the tick to be the person who validated that transaction, you earn a small piece of Bitcoin for doing that. So if I have a massive server farm that can compete in the Bitcoin mining and the Bitcoin in the Bitcoin mining and transaction validation space, I'm going to win and I'm going to earn money. And that is what is really, you know, causing the huge amounts of energy consumption. Now, that is not a mechanism that's across the board with all cryptocurrencies or, you know, blockchain. So that is a proof of work process. There's also a proof of stake process. It still uses decentralized computers to validate transactions, but it isn't competitive in nature. So it encourages a different process that is still energy intensive in a way, but nowhere near the levels of the kind of Bitcoin levels. So, and then there's, you know, I mean, we work with Stellar, which I'll probably talk about. Stellar is one of the cryptos out there. We use their blockchain, and they have their own independent process for validating transactions, still decentralized. But again, I mean, statistically, if we look at Stellar, and that's in a list of, I would say, five of the most energy efficient blockchains. I mean, a transaction on the Stellar network uses less energy than a Visa transaction. So it's negligible and not even worth mentioning, but we have to talk about it a lot because, you know, they are thrown into the kind of bag with the Bitcoins and the Ethereums of the world. So,
yeah, absolutely. So there is a lot of energy used for Bitcoin and Ethereum right now. Things are shifting in the Ethereum space, at least. But as you've said and shared, there are lots of other chains and other protocols out there that have already solved for the energy problem and can be used in a way more sustainable way. So now that we've got that out of the way.
I just want to add one thing, actually, because it is, like I said, I'm not a crypto guy, but it is interesting, and anyone can go on the internet, research this. You can make, let's just say that the whole crypto world was going to replace the traditional banking world. You know, this kind of, it's a very nuanced argument. It's not just, hey, crypto uses this, banking world uses this. And you start to look at the traditional banking world and the energy consumption. That is also massive. And, you know, you can make good argument if you were, which I'm not, like I say, this isn't a Bitcoin podcast, but there are plenty of good arguments to be made that say, hey, let's say Bitcoin replaced traditional monetary systems, that actually probably the energy argument would become a little bit redundant because you'd be going, well, balance that against flights and buildings and everything else. So anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of different arguments. And yes, so as we said, it's not a Bitcoin podcast today. We're just setting the scene so that people have a great understanding or baseline understanding for us to dive then into deeper topics on this. So what about NFT mining? And is it all that bad? Like, maybe you can unpack a little bit more about some of these other protocols and other different ways of doing things and kind of, yeah, talk about, I guess, your process with this as well.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the problem with NFTs in general is that, I mean, firstly, the NFT world exploded in 2021, 26,000% growth. it became a real thing, arguably. There's obviously also a lot in there that will just, I think, disappear and the real stuff will come out over time. But the big problem with NFTs is the majority of them initially had been minted on the Ethereum network. And when you do that, again, Ethereum is using a mining process. And I think it's something like 80% of all NFTs out there are on Ethereum. And, you know, if I mint an NFT, and it's on Ethereum, there's a transactional validation process sitting behind that. It uses energy, not as much as Bitcoin, but still up there. And that, yeah, it's the same problem. However, there are other solutions in the NFT world. And obviously we've just, you know, recently launched an NFT marketplace, which is focused on social and environmental impact. And, you know, we're built on Stellar. We don't have those issues, hence, you know, not to repeat my stat around a Visa transaction, but it just comes down to the types of blockchain you're using and the way that transactions are validated. But yeah, with NFTs, you mint an NFT, you know, there's transactional processes that are validated as you get your gas fees and you're buying into that. And
yeah, thanks. And so let's zoom in a little bit. What was the thing that first pulled you into this space, actually, into the Web3 world?
So I've kind of ended up in the Web3 world, really. Like, it's not been, you know, my background professionally, I've been in on and off in kind of software, sales, marketing, management roles for 25 years, really. And then, you know, about 10, 12, maybe a little bit longer, I got into more the social entrepreneurship space just through some work of my own. I was doing kind of outside work, just some kind of projects. And that found me kind of end up in the nonprofit world in terms of software. And I then became a partner, co-founder in Task.io 3.5 years ago. That decision had nothing to do with Web3 or blockchain. That decision had to do with, this is a really interesting business. It's about using software in a way that can make a difference, you know, working with social enterprises. And I really honestly didn't know anything about blockchain when I came into the business 3.5 years ago. But blockchain has been a really good piece of technology to scale out the work we're doing, which obviously inevitably has brought me into the Web3 world and then the NFT marketplace that we built in the last 6 months, which is the Blue Marble, which sits on top. I mean, it's same code base. We just branded it differently because the personas, the people we're dealing with are quite different to the kind of B2B services business where we're dealing with social enterprises and nonprofits. So yeah, that's the kind of the journey. And then I find myself, yeah, in the last kind of 6 months on conversations talking about Web3, because Web3 has become the kind of brand. You know, 2 years ago, everyone was kind of hyping about blockchain. I think last year it was AI, and now Web3 has all these different pieces of the jigsaw come in, and, you know, it's all sitting under the banner of Web3. So
yeah, absolutely. So maybe we can double click for a second onto understanding how you're using the blockchain with Task.io and how that's actually helping people to maximize their social environmental impact.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I will do that by explaining one of our customers. I mean, it's the best way, the easiest way. And we have a platform, software platform, that is a combination of a desktop product and a mobile app download. So if I'm a program manager, a volunteer manager, maybe someone running a small social enterprise, I can go to the desktop of Task, create a project, invite in teams via mobile, and they can give me information via the mobile app and, you know, track activities that can be displayed for funders so they know how funds are being used, what's going on. And that's all on a blockchain ledger. Now, you know, why blockchain? Where does that become interesting? Well, so we're working with an organization called Biochar Life. They teach farmers in predominantly Thailand and Africa methods to stop open burning fields, which is a massive problem. You know, open burning of crop waste, huge issue. I mean, it's on my doorstep in Thailand, seasonal, three months a year. They burn all the crop waste, smoke goes into the air, and they teach them to create a product called biochar. Biochar can be buried, used as fertilizer, it can be used as animal feed. And through our platform, they then track that process. So the farmers, in conjunction with the volunteers from the organization, will track information around, hey, how much biochar did I create? Did it travel anywhere? So diesel was used. How was it used after it was produced? So has it gone into the ground? All of this information can then be used to calculate the amount of carbon removed from the air. So, you know, by creating biochar, they're obviously stopping smoke by stopping burning. But they're also reducing or removing carbon from the air, which is a hugely useful process. Now, when we get all that data onto a blockchain ledger, we then mint an asset. So we create a token that has a value. In this case, they call it the STS, Stop the S token. Stop the Smoke token. And it has a value of $150 per carbon, per ton of carbon removed. And that can then be, you know, purchased by a company overseas or an individual that wants to offset their footprint. So, and we're now starting to create NFTs of that. I mean, I can share these links. You know, an NFT looks nice. It's a nice picture, but it's got nothing to do with the nice picture. You can click on a PDF link to the data that's baked into that NFT, which can never be changed. And that shows you all the data from the farming communities, how they dealt with the crop waste, how they created biochar, and how that relates to, in this case, one ton of carbon removed. So, you know, you're creating then a monetary system around this process, really, really, you know, really handy, secure, validated. I mean, these things can always be tampered with and broken, but from a technology point of view, you know, it's pretty much fail safe. And, you know, that money that then comes in funds the farming communities to continue the cycle. So that's probably the best way to explain the process and the use of our platform and the use of blockchain, essentially, in running that.
And so do all of your clients typically do it in a similar way, in the sense that they have some type of social or environmental impact that allows the creation of an NFT, or as you said, tokenizing of that, for then people to be able to offset different things? Or is it quite different for your different partners?
No, it's quite different. So the TASK platform, which has been the business really, and up till the last 6 months, the NFT marketplace is an extension of that. In many cases, you know, customers are just using our platform to track activities, to update donors. The blockchain piece, you know, isn't necessarily important. But in other cases, yeah, minting NFTs is a great way to generate income around the work that's being done. But the NFT marketplace itself, yeah, has quite different uses. So that is an environmental NFT. It's got nothing to do with art. It's about data. It's not typically an NFT that would be traded. It's more about, hey, I'm offsetting X number of tons of carbon and I can report on that. But within our marketplace, we've also got, you know, the ability for creators to come in to publish work. So it could be an artist, it could be, you know, some other kind of creator, a celebrity or whatever, and then split royalties with a nonprofit, which that is much more like the traditional, what we're seeing with the NFT world right now in terms of the creator. But the uniqueness of our platform is the ability to split revenues through a smart contract with, you know, a chosen charity. And then on our platform, that charity can update, you know, via the mobile app, how the funds are used. So kind of be transparent back to the investor from that NFT.
Mm. Yeah, really interesting. Do you consider yourself an environmentalist? I mean, I know you're also living in a very like purpose-built house and you're relying like completely off the grid and everything. So, but at heart, do you consider yourself an environmentalist?
Yeah, no, not really. It's interesting. I don't, not any more than, you know, no, I'm not kind of walking around with a, you know, t-shirt that says, you know, save the trees and anything else. I don't think
that's what modern environmentalists look like anymore though.
I don't think I'm any different though to, I mean, when I lived in Singapore, I was always conscious of recycling and everything else, right? I've kind of stumbled into living off grid and I love it. It's great. It's challenging, but it was not, I didn't make the decision based on, I am an environmentalist, I suppose. That's why I say that. I mean, I could just say here and go, yeah, I mean, but that's the truth. I mean, that's how I've kind of stumbled into that situation. However, and this is not really, I mean, it's not just about the environmental aspect of how I live, actually. It's when I look at the last few years of lockdown and, you know, the lifestyle of being able to be self-sufficient, I think I would certainly say I'm very much attracted to that lifestyle and probably 90% of the way there. I think that's a great, you know, and that is about not just environmentalists. I mean, that's obviously, you know, there's many other aspects to that. So, I'm definitely environmentally conscious, socially conscious as well, though. I mean, I'm kind of a bit of both, really. But with the caveat there, when I speak to, you know, people in the UK, and I think of like my younger sister and, you know, the younger generations, and without saying my age, I'm definitely up there now. It feels to me like there's so much of an environmental conscious generation now. Like, I didn't know about recycling when I was at school. I'd never even think about it. I was just chucking plastic in the bin. And, you know, that has become a process I've lived through, which is a really healthy, great change in the world. But environmentally conscious, I don't think any more than the generation now that are growing up with, you know, my niece, who is, what's she, 8, I think. She's so environmentally conscious, you know. It's great because they're, you know, kids in, not everywhere, but in certain cultures now, just are being brought up with this as part of learning, which is so great, you know.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, I was just curious because obviously you're living off grid, as I said, and also the work that you're doing is very environmentally and socially focused. So have you also received any pushback, I guess, from wider community or other people around, yeah, just trying, you know, doing what you're doing, using this type of technology with an environmental lens?
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I can think, funnily enough, I was on an interview in Chiang Mai. Won't mention the, but I, you know, it became an hour long that someone was listening in and we were having a conversation like this, and someone was getting really heated about what I was talking about the program I was just going on about. But I suppose I just don't. And then I explained the whole, you know, how Stellar works and how we use their blockchain and how it's got nothing to do with Bitcoin. And so it definitely get pushback in that way. But, you know, technology is just one piece of the puzzle, and, you know, educating people on it is important. I mean, the fact to say, you know, it's an interesting question as to how about pushback. I mean, yeah, we're on a podcast now and we're starting off talking about energy and blockchain, and I don't talk about it ever in my everyday work or my job because it's got nothing to do with our business. But yeah, it has to be explained, and yeah, there is always that kind of pushback that needs to be explained to people in terms of what's the difference between Bitcoin and blockchain and all this other stuff that's going on around it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very complicated. And I think the media also latches on and sensationalizes, and then people just read headlines and then that's what they understand about it. But because it is so complicated, the technology, and there's so many different pieces to it, and it moves so quickly, I think that it's quite difficult for just people that aren't deeply researching in this space or being exposed to it all the time to fully even understand or appreciate. And so they just kind of shut it down and give that pushback. So yeah, that's why I was just curious to see if you had faced then.
Funnily enough, and because I know your audience is, you know, with my audience and the stuff we do, there is a portion that's in the environmental space, but there's also other audiences around, you know, social projects and stuff. But interesting, the bigger pushback through conversation is on that project is the issue of carbon credits. And you know, so that program alone has two challenges. First, you're talking about blockchain with an environmental program. Then you're suddenly talking about carbon credits, which there's all sorts of misinformation around that. I mean, that program I just went through there is around carbon removal. And I mean, I've had real pushback about that online when I've posted about it on LinkedIn. And then I've gotten calls afterwards to have conversations with people because I know these people, they're like on my doorstep, the farmers. And I'm like, hey, this is not just about, you know, a company in the UK or the US or wherever buying an offset. That money generates really needed income for a smallholder farmer, and it stops his family and local community suffering from smoke pollution. You know, that credit is massively important. Now, could there be greenwashing on the part of the company? Yeah, that's not my expert area. But even if there was, I'm going, hey, you've got a mechanism here where carbon's being removed. A farming community is being supported from a revenue standpoint, from a well-being standpoint, from an income standpoint, and their family also. So yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you can hear me. So I've had way more. I have to deal with those arguments actually more than the tech ones, which is interesting. So, but that's, yeah. I just wanted to highlight all that because I think it's really important, because people may listen and go, oh, it's these carbon credit schemes, but it's such a healthy program that it ticks every box as far as I'm concerned. So,
and I think this is where it's just so important for people to actually do a little bit of their own research. And I know it's so everyone's running out of time and there's, you know, people just have a lot on their plates and they read stuff and they just make assumptions. And that's such a dangerous game, especially when people like you are really going that extra mile and there's so many benefits as you've just listed off. And so I think it's really important for people to not blanket, you know, blanket accuse and blanket this whole conversation, because actually there are a lot of people like you who are doing very traceable, very easily understood and impact levels that have these multifacets, you know, and I think that is a really important part of this transition. You know, while a lot of people say that carbon credits are bad, they're, you know, it's greenwashing and it may be that, but unfortunately, I really believe it's part of the transition and it's a really important part of the transition, because we have to just get to this point first and then the regulation will be catching up. I hope. I have hope that the regulation will catch up and eventually the true cost of emissions and the true cost of carbon emissions will actually be factored into taxes or factored into the cost along the different supply chains, so that the companies who are polluting are actually paying for it along the way. And therefore, yeah, it'll be in their best interest to actually reduce the amount of carbon that they're emitting, whether it's through taxes or through paying real cost for the environmental cost or social cost for things that are being created, then it is in their best interest to reduce. So we're not there yet though. And so we do need this transition. And for projects like yours, you can clearly see that there are multi benefits to this. And yeah, I think that it's hitting multiple SDGs at the same time as well. So I think, yeah, people need to just have a little bit more nuance and do a little bit more research and ask the right questions before they accuse and push back. At least that's my two cents of it.
Cool. And agree.
Yes. So I read one of your posts that also said that a common misconception is that the current NFT hype cycle is a passing fad. So why do you think it's not actually a fad? And why do you think it's going to be around for longer than some people are saying?
Well, I mean, firstly, there is an absolute load of hype with NFTs. You know, last year, I mean, I say last year because I think already people are seeing a lot of what got, you know, the money that spent last year is just probably going to be wasted money. And yeah, but I think the technology behind it is what's important. At the moment, everyone's, you know, in certain sectors is talking about NFTs. I think as it evolves and goes forward, there'll be less talk and a more application. But yeah, the fad stuff is really the digital art world, which is where NFTs have started off. And it's not really about art. I mean, it's just started there. It's about verification. It's about receipting. It's about being able to say, hey, this is mine, you know, and I own it, and, you know, you can't disprove that, and you can't pinch it, and you can't go and profit from it. And yeah, there's some really great application around that. I mean, the art world, I love what it can do, to be honest. NFTs, what it can do for artists, particularly music. I think that's going to be so exciting. I'm not in that space, but honestly, personally, I really love what it can do for music. Because if you think of, look at Spotify as a great example of how, and I, like I said, I'm talking slightly out of my expert area, but if you look at Spotify, certain artists on there, you know, make a dollar a tune and, you know, have lost so much of what is their kind of, you know, bread and butter money. And NFTs give them back that control, because they are ultimately able to license things as an individual, lock that in, and then bring in the money to support, you know, the stuff they love doing via their own community. So it's definitely not a passing fad. And there's all sorts of, I mean, property, for example, the NFT technology ultimately allows you to lock down contractual terms, licenses, you know, within blockchain. And there's lots of different ways that can be used, whether it's looking at supply chains, whether it's looking at property is definitely going to be a big area. Land, I mean, there's already, I think in Hong Kong, it's probably one of the first kind of property startups using NFTs. But we're a long way off. I mean, this is, now, as those things grow, you won't be talking about NFTs. If I'm a, you know, consumer of that business or a buyer of that, I won't. NFT technology will just be something that's used in the background to deal with processes. And then everyone will be just explaining the value proposition around that. The problem is right now, the fad stuff is because it's all NFTs. And, you know, it's been, you know, these apes and all these, the JPEGy world and all this other stuff. So, which, some of it's great, some of it's good, some of it's nothing, and it's, you know, going to go away, much of it, really. So
Yeah. So then what can you share about the interesting social and environmental applications and use cases using NFTs that you might have seen or even for a charity under that kind of realm?
So firstly, obviously, I've explained the environmental NFTs, really quite easy to understand. I mean, it's just about baking in data that can be verified. You know, in that project, actually, we've now got the European Biochar Committee has accredited that process. That's great, because that really ticks a box for that style of NFT. However, you know, I'm seeing some really exciting stuff in around the kind of donor area, where if I want to give to a nonprofit, you know, I give $100, or you know, maybe I give something more regularly, whatever it is, that's a donation. But there's a great way of gamifying donations via NFTs. So, you know, we just launched our first NFT campaign on the Blue Marble 3 days ago. It's one where an artist has minted a piece of work, 100 NFTs, $50 each, and they've said 100% will go to this charity. Now, because that could be just a picture and a donation, right? Doesn't, when you think about it that way, it doesn't need to be an NFT. Like, the question of why is it an NFT? However, creating an NFT around that piece of art, which obviously locks it in this case, it's a fractionalized NFT. So there's a run of 100, same piece of art, one to 100 buyers. The $50 in each case goes to Art Table in this case. Now, there's a tradable process now with that NFT. And whenever it gets traded, that nonprofit will benefit, as will the seller. So I can, it creates a, I think, a real fun element to the donor process. And fundraising managers inside nonprofits are always looking for new ways to incentivize the donation process rather than, you know, and I think there's a big opportunity around this. I was speaking to an expert in Web3 and in the nonprofit world the other week, and he was saying the same thing. I mean, this is something that hasn't been done just with traditional donor mechanisms, where you're saying, hey, great, there's 100 NFTs. These can now be, you know, retraded, and great, I get something back from my $100, but the nonprofit gets another donation, not the full amount, whatever you've kind of baked in as the secondary sale donation. But that for me is a really exciting area. Don't know where it's going to go, but it's one example where I think you can have, and I think it links into, you know, the fun that's being had with NFTs, you know, in the art world. A lot of the fun will go away, but this is creating some kind of utility around the process where there's a reason to go and buy again and bring in a secondary buyer who's also a donor into the process. So yeah,
no, absolutely. I think a lot of potential there. And so if you kind of look into the future in the next 5-10 years, what do you think we're going to be seeing in the space? What kind of potential do you think there is? Any sort of dreams, I guess, about like how this can really be used to sort of solve some of the world's problems?
I don't think I'm clever enough to be able to give a really great 10-year vision on NFTs, but I will give some examples of stuff I think is real. Firstly, I think 10 years from now, there'll be 300% more application use of NFTs and, you know, and 90% less conversation about the word NFT, which I think is important, as with any new technology. One area I think is really exciting, though, which we've been looking into and speaking to lawyers is natural asset protection and fractionalizing, you know, land NFTs. As what I mean by that is, okay, there's a, you know, 100 square kilometer piece of rainforest here that needs protecting. And you could use NFT technology to manage all the buying legal process of that piece of land, fractionalize it, so hundreds of thousands of buyers can get involved to protect and vote on how the land is protected, what happens. Now, that for me is really exciting. We're looking at how this can be done. It's a number of years away. I mean, actually in the UK, it's been done. There is someone who's created, I think, forest DAO. I think it was a small local forest, but it's a little experiment. I don't know how big it is, but there was like 100 people chipped in to buy a piece of forest for £50,000. Those 100 people all live geographically next to that forest. The NFT technology holds all the licensing of that. There's voting rights within the NFT. But I think importantly here, what you're doing is creating an investment mechanism, right? Because, you know, I think it's really important to create the opportunity for people to benefit financially off these processes. If you can do that, then the incentives are, you know, way beyond just the incentives to a person that just wants to give or donate. And not everyone can. And jumping into land ownership as well now or in the future is going to be very difficult. And you create opportunities where people can, and do it for good reason and potentially benefit from it financially as well, which I think is really exciting. I think you've got to, you know, we can't all be philanthropists where we have enough money just to be going and buying a piece of rainforest or doing this. Everyone, you know, needs to still be part of the economic process of survival. So yeah, that I think is interesting. Very early stages, experimental, but we have, you know, we've had conversations with two different legal firms in two different regions to see where could we do this first. And if anyone listening has ideas, we're always open to, we've got the technology to do it now. It's more a case of, you know, where's the right geography? Where can we protect a, yeah, it could be a parkland or it could be a playground. You know, it could be inside a urban area or whatever else. And then there could be some nice art attached to the fractionalized NFT where it creates something fun. And so, yeah, that for me is, you know, I'm personally excited about that. I think it'd be very, very interesting. But I'm sure there's going to be a load of other stuff that I absolutely cannot envision right now. So, yeah, still a lot of learning.
No, but I think that's a really great example and something that's very practical and would be very beneficial for a lot of different projects and for protecting a lot of different ecosystems around the world. So for someone that's maybe not very into this space yet or might be curious to get a little bit more involved, what kind of advice would you have to them?
That's a good question. In the NFT space, you mean?
In general, in NFT, blockchain, whatever advice comes.
You know, my first, what popped into my head, and I'm going to say it and then retract it, was, hey, get out there and buy an NFT. But, you know, I would have said that 6 months ago. Now I won't. That's what I did. I mean, you know, I did that a year ago as I was you know, and that NFT is now sitting there and probably will never sell. And that's a real reality of the NFT space. However, I would say do that on our platform because the money's going somewhere good. And yeah, but in a more, you know, on a more serious note, I mean, I just think if you're really interested, I mean, the challenge with Google is it's a great place. The internet is a great place to go and learn about this stuff, but it's sifting through the clickbait and, you know, and the good and bad voices. And yeah, for me, it's pick the right podcasts and, you know, learn that way actually, or find the right communities to get into. I know you guys, or sorry, not you guys, but I know, you know, we've been introduced, I think, through, or it's come about at the same time, but you're part of a, you know, Women in Web 3 group. And I know another one of those over in the US. So yeah, I think, yeah, listen to the right podcasts, pick a community that's relevant to your own profile and the work you're doing or what you want to learn. And yeah, that's the best way really. So
yes, Untamed, it is called, our Web3.
That's right. Thank
Women
you.
In Web3 community, for anyone that's listening. Yeah, I think that's a really important point. You know, you have to find community and resources that actually make sense to you, because there's a lot out there. And I feel like there's a lot out there that's very heavy and technical. And now there's a huge influx of women coming into the space who are explaining things in a very different way. And I'm all for that. So final question for you today is, how do you think that we can live wide awake?
How do you think we could live wide awake?
Yes, that's the name of the podcast. So everybody gets on.
That's a good question. Honestly, for me, I mean, you can, it's hard, you know, I'll answer this question from my own perspective, but it's just, you know, taking a little bit of time each day to sit back and breathe and be aware, you know, as in what I mean by that, we're constantly breathing, but it's just stopping, you know, for a few minutes each day and reflecting on things really. You know, running a startup, which we definitely are, that is always a big challenge, but, you know, and something I have to remind myself of really. So hence that's why I say it. But I think, yeah, sitting back and breathing and reflecting each day for at least some time, whether it's a minute or whether it's sitting on a meditation mat for half an hour, you know, which it doesn't have to be incidentally, but I think doing just sitting back, reflecting and breathing and know you're breathing and recognizing that is really important.
Yes, I think that's a wonderful one. Thank you for sharing. And thank you, Matt, for joining us and for bearing with us with all the definitions and explanations. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks, Steph. Really enjoyed it. Appreciate you inviting me on.
Three things I'm taking away from this conversation with Matt. Firstly, technology is just one piece of a very big puzzle in the fight against climate change. Secondly, there is a lot of potential for NFTs and fractionalized tokens to protect natural land and resources that are already being tested and adapted in different places around the world. And finally, coupling investment mechanisms with environmental impact is a very interesting space with huge potential. curious, what did you think about the episode and what were your main takeaways? Is there a topic you want me to dive deeper into? I'd love to hear from you. You can find me at Steph L. Dixon or at Live Wide Awake. If you got something out of the podcast and you want to continue this journey with us, consider subscribing and supporting. I hope that today's conversation stirred something deep within you, ready to awaken. And until next time, live wide awake.